So we got Joe tomorrow. Then we got this guy. All right, let's welcome back to our show our friend Jay Paterno. Jay, good morning. How you doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Not bad.
Well, we're hanging in there with a cold.
I'm doing better than Geese.
He's doing better than I am. Yeah. So, I saw this recently, and I thought, oh, let's reach out to Jay. Because, Jay, you've got a new book. It says September 6th, so I assume the book came out officially on Saturday. Does that sound about right to you?
They've been sending that out. It was last September, but it's still out. It's still pretty new.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And as soon as I saw the title, I thought, oh, why has someone not written this book before? All right. The book is called Blitzed. And I thought, yes, a College Avenue bar crawl to a book. Yes. Why hasn't somebody joined? All right. Now, Jay, first, my first question, does your mother know that you wrote this book?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. She read it. So
she read it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's an old English I shouldn't say an old English teacher because she's not old.
Ouch.
But and she taught for a year or two at Bellefonte, but she's never kind of let go of that. So she'll correct punctuation and a number of other things.
Yep.
Hey, this sentence doesn't make sense to me, Jay.
Folks, by the way, the book is not a College Avenue bar crawl book, okay? We're joking.
No, Goon kept pushing for that. Goon could have helped you with that that version
he
of Blitzed.
He could write a book. There we go. It's called Blitzed, the All-Out Pressure of College Football's New Era. Okay, now I get it. Jay, let me open with this. Now, this is not your first book. You've written stuff before. What's it like to write a book? I mean, I've thought about that from time to time, write a book about, I don't know, some subject that I know something about and so on. But then I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, that's way too much work. I can't do it. What's it like to write a book for folks that might be interested in trying that sometime?
Scott, you hit the nail on the head. Everybody goes, oh, yeah, I had to write a book about this or that or whatever the subject may be. You got all kinds of ideas and notes. You put them down and you go, oh, my God, how do I organize this? Where do I start? How do I get these things done? And it's just you have to take it one step at a time or you'll be completely overwhelmed in the process. And I think that's the most important thing is that you sit down and you outline the idea of where you want to go. To start, generally that's going to change three or four times, but at least gives you a starting point. I'm already working on another book coming out that will be out in another year or so. But I'm in that process back to square one where you're going, well, how does this piece fit with that? How does this piece with that fit with that? But you have to, every day you have to have goals you can reasonably achieve that day on the project. Otherwise, you will go absolutely berserk trying to keep up with it.
Now, do you have, like, an agent? I mean, can you do this
Yep.
sort of thing independently these days with digital this, that, and the other thing? How does that work?
You can do it both ways. I've had an agent for some books. I've not had an agent for other books. You can self-publish. There's a lot of places where you can self-publish books. And then when you do that, you know, the money's all yours, but you also do the promotion, do those kind of things, whereas if you have a publisher, they're going to publish it, and they're going to take on, take on a lot of the initial costs or whatever of promoting it and everything. So, you know, it's just a matter of which way you want to go.
All right, let's start from scratch, Jay. Kind of give us the Cliff Notes version. Ha ha ha. What's this book about? Why did you write this book?
Well, I had written a book called Hot Seat, which was ostensibly about, and that was, 2016, before the NIL and transfer portal era. And that was really kind of talking about what it was like coaching college football. And I wrote it as a novel, as is this, because that would allow me to tell some things that are really going on without having to worry about, you know, someone lawyering up or calling and saying you wrote this about our program, that's not 100% true, whatever it may be. Even if it was, I just figured if you write it as a novel, it saves you a lot of pain. But the general idea was in the book Hot Seat, it started with a coach at Ohio State who had lost to Michigan, lost a bowl game, and was told by the president, you have 1 year to win or else. And all the things that come in and all the challenges. Well, then this, you know, after that book came out, a couple years later, someone said, you know, because I've been consulting in NIL stuff, said, you ought to write one about one in the NIL age. So that's what this book is, and it takes you into all those things because now there are agents involved in recruiting. You're not just dealing with a player and his parents. You're dealing with money demands. You're dealing with all kinds of things that come with it. Guys walk in your office and say, well, how come this guy makes this much NIL and I only make this much? I'm a starter. He's, you know, it's all these things, plus all the off-the-field stuff and the collectives that come involved. You know, you've had a lot of really interesting things happen in collectives, and some of it pretty shady, some of it legit. So it covers all these things, plus all the things that the coach is dealing with, trying to juggle all these things as opposed to what used to be, and including mental health issues for players, mental health issues for even the coach, the head coach, because he's got this 24/7 pressure cooker that he's got to deal with and have the – and a lot of coaches don't get any kind of help or talk to anybody.
All right, now that earlier book. All right, let's welcome to our program Ryan Day, ladies and gentlemen. Because Jay, you just described Ryan Day, didn't you?
It was written in 2016, 2017 at that time, and one of the two of the people that read it to give me feedback were Urban Meyer and his wife Shelley. And Urban said, "Boy, you nailed this." Because he really nailed this. I said, yeah. But I had recruited the state of Ohio for 17, 18 years, and that's why I picked it, because I was familiar with the state, the recruiting, some of the politics involved in that job. You know, I'd gotten to know Jim Tressel very well over the years, still talk to him, got to know Urban. And, you know, very few guys leave that job completely, you know, without some drama involved. And that's certainly been the case.
Jay, when you look at the college football landscape, I mean, you must think, and I realize we're in the age we're in, this is the way it unfolded, but honest to God, if the NCAA had just a little forethought and had just listened to your dad a little bit, because what has thrown a lot of people off is we went from one extreme where, my God, you can't provide cream cheese for the bagel that is being served to a recruit, to, hey, here's millions of dollars before you even step on campus. What your dad had said all along, hey, we're making millions and millions, could we shuttle a little stipend the player's way so that they could afford, you know, his line was always the pizza for him and his buddies on a Friday night. Could we not just provide a little something for this young individual who is committing a ton of time, bringing in sees his jersey going off the shelves at the student bookstore and whatnot? It's like, can we not just allow them to not be literally starving on a Thursday night in Happy Valley? It just is. It is just stunning to me how little forethought, how zero forethought was given by the NCAA to how this thing eventually would have to unfold.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. When California passed the NIL law in 2021, I started consulting right after that with people. And, you know, if you had the leadership then that you had with guys like Tom Osborne, certainly Joe Paterno, there was a guy named Chuck Ninus, who was the commissioner of the Big 8 for a while, which then became the Big 12, there was a number of people that were very, very vocal leaders. Who would have gotten together in a room and said, okay, this is inevitable. Let's just face up what's coming.
Yep.
And let's create rules and a structure to govern this. But everything the NCAA does is they're afraid of lawyers. So they have just let decisions by courts overtake them rather than going and proposing solutions. And the reality is you're going, even though we think it is settled down now, you know, if you look at what's going on, there's going to have to be a collective bargaining agreement. There's going to have to be a whole situation where you have salary caps and all these kind of things have to come in. Because the truth of the matter is what we're doing now is we're running a professional business, sports entertainment business on our campus that we were doing it. Everything is for sale. Money is coming in. The players see logos on the field, logos on the scoreboard, logos on their jerseys, logos on their shoes, everything, and they see a $1.1 billion media rights deal for the Big Ten. That's just the Big Ten. And they're saying, well, if we're not playing this game, who are they televising? How are they making all this money? And they see coaches making $25,000 a day. They see, athletic directors now with agents and multi-million dollar contracts and promoting their own brand. And they're saying, well, you know what? I'm the one that gets hit. I'm the one that's gotta drive the pile forward on fourth and one or we lose. And we're the reason people are here to televise. I mean, look, CBS or FS1 isn't coming Saturday to televise Penn State against Villanova because James is on the sideline or because Ferrante, the coach of Villanova, is on the sideline. They are coming because they want to see Nick Singleton and Al R and Dennis Denai Sutton and those guys play and do their thing. And that's what fans want to watch. I mean, look, nobody wants to watch coaches play cornhole on TV for 3 hours. They want to see the players play, and that's really what's going to happen.
Jay, I've said here on the show a bunch of times, this whole thing now is unsustainable. At some point in the future, this train wreck is going to crash, and I don't know what happens after that. The numbers are staggering. Just, this is unsustainable. This has to blow up at some point. Jay, am I right or wrong?
You're exactly right. And I think some point somewhere, there's going to be a really smart head football coach that is going to do a analysis of everything in his own program and say, I don't need to make $9 million. I can get by in 3.5. My assistant coaches, I can get assistant coaches that are good enough to do what I want to do for less. I don't need 85 employees. I can get by on 30 because we still only have 11 guys, or whatever, maybe 40, whatever it is. They're going to cut back on staff that they don't need. They're going to cut back on their own salary and say, we could take that 12 to 14 million that we're going to save by doing things more efficiently. And with all we hear about is all this technology. Well, with all this technology, we keep hiring boatloads of more people. I mean, you look at staffing levels. Staffing levels a decade ago in football were 30, 35 people. Now you're looking at 85. And there's only 11 guys in the field, but there's all this automation that's supposed to make it easier. You have video departments that had two guys that now have 15 or 16 people working for them. Why? There's no more, So someone's going to sit down and say, okay, I can get by on this. I can do this. And that extra 12 to 14 million now we can put back into a sustainable business model. There's no business model in America where the CEO of a company or CEO of a, or head of a division, like football is, makes 10 to 12% of total revenues. Not profit, 10 to 12% of total revenues. If you sell, you look at some of these salaries at 9.4 or 10 million, you walk in the game and 10 to 12 or $14 of every ticket sold in some of these places is going right in the head coach's, just to pay the head coach's salary. And when you look at what we've done here, and again, this is not to be critical of anybody's job performance, and no, don't take it that way. This is the numbers. Between facility upgrades and what we've committed in salary just to the head coach here in football, we've invested $1 billion, $1 billion. At a time when MIT and Caltech and A&M and Texas are investing $1 billion in AI research. So we've clearly made a commitment to football. It may be too much. Who knows?
All right, now, Jay, just listening to your description there, let's get in trouble. We haven't done that in a while. It almost sounds like you're saying there's a lot of folks in college sports, I'm going to use the word selfish, I'm going to grab as much money as I can grab. From what you just described, the smart coach that you were describing is willing to back off and cover everything. Is that too extreme, Jay? There are a lot of people in college sports now that, I'm going to use the word selfish, they want to grab as much money as they can possibly grab right now.
There's no question. The Big Ten and the SEC right now, and I say this as a trustee of a Big Ten university, we are looking to get as much money as we can from everything that we do so that we can give all our schools a spending advantage on everybody else. The fact that the Big Ten and the SEC are looking at the playoff system and demanding automatic qualifiers, well, how about you earn the qualifier? you know, whatever happened to that model where, oh, if I'm good enough, I'll make it. But no, we want four guaranteed slots. But there's no question. And I think what it is you know, we went through this phase about 3 years ago where every head coach, his agent, was asking for 10-year contracts. And I said at that time to other members of our board, I said, look, they all want 10-year contracts because revenue sharing is coming. So they want to make sure that agent wants to make, and I'm not blaming the coaches. The agent's doing their job. The schools are the ones that should stick a stake in the ground saying, no, that's not how it's going to work. But, I mean, and it's not just coaches. You look at university presidents. You look at university presidents are jumping around. ADs are jumping around. They're all looking for the next big deal, the next big offer, and, they go in and do these things. So that's symptomatic of the entire system of higher education leadership right now, not just football coaches.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, we don't fault people for in the so-called real world. If you're working at a company and another company comes along and says, "Hey, I'll double your salary," there may be other extenuating circumstances, but generally speaking, people are going to, "Oh, okay, I'll go to this company over here." So, I mean, I understand it as far as it goes, and it does come down to. And this is where, to me, Jay, it's just been really interesting to see what Pat Kraft has been able to do. Because, Penn State is in much better position on the NIL front in terms of what it can offer student-athletes than what it was prior to Pat getting here. But certainly Penn State is not at the top of the charts. But I think, again, it's... Just like with a job, salary is going to be a big component, and you need to be in the ballpark of what competitors are paying you, or would pay you if you went somewhere else. But again, there are other factors, quality of life, family, all of the things that come in, is the overall environment something, you like? And I do think, just looking at this from Penn State's perspective, that there's a lot to like right here. But to your point too, with the coach, I hadn't really thought about that component. But a la Tom Brady, it's like, yeah, I'll take a little less. I'm about getting rings, and I know that's going to pay off long term here, and it certainly did. It's an interesting. I got to think that one through a little more, but it makes a lot of sense. Especially again, I think most people can get by on $2.5 million a year versus 4, 5, 6, 7.
Well, that's a stretch.
So,
I don't know.
I don't know. It's an interesting thought, but I do think again, if you want to compete in this world, and Penn State clearly has made the decision, and I think most fans are okay with that decision. Yep, we're going to compete in it. Then you do. You got to compete. You cannot like it. You cannot be happy that this is the world we're living in. But if you're going to compete in it, you need to be able to adjust to it. And I think, to a very large degree, Penn State has made that adjustment.
Yeah, there's any question that we chased a lot of money, and I know people don't like certain things that comes with it. Your stadium starts to take on the feel of a NASCAR venue.
Yep.
But that's those are people that are willing to write checks for that kind of access, and that's just kind of the world we live in. Again, like you said, you don't have to like it, but I think that. Again, is it sustainable? Because at some point, you need the companies need to see a return on the investment they put in, and whether that will be the case, we'll find out. Because it's still too new for anybody to really have any kind of metrics as to how much return they get on what they put into it.
Well, and I think even the way they're approaching it, right, with this Adidas deal, Jay, where, whatever, I don't know what the percentage is, but whatever money's going kind of directly to the student-athlete, so there's kind of a workaround there for to benefit the student-athletes while also benefiting the general athletic program. I think, at least for the short term, you're going to see a lot more, I'll call it creativity here in terms of, all right, let's figure out ways we can make this work, get, you know, more access to those dollars for the student athletes so that we can at least be, again, competitive with the schools that we're competing against.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. But again, when you get into the shoe thing now, you know, you get into a situation where what if the best running back in the country already has a deal with Nike? And now you say, okay, well, you got to wear Adidas when you play for us.
Yep.
That lawsuit's coming, and that lawsuit is going to win. And all of a sudden, the dollars that you're getting from those companies are not what they were. And, you know, there's so we'll see. You know, I don't want to get too much into the weeds on the Adidas-Nike deal because I have a very different opinion on some things on that because I was privy to some things that a lot of people weren't. But that's a different topic for a different time.
Hey, kid, switch from Nike to Adidas. We'll throw more money your way. There's the answer right there.
There you go.
Jay, very quick, before we take a break. All right, yes, you're a Board of Trustee member. How's Penn State doing with all this right now? I mean, are they on the curve, ahead of the curve? Where are they?
I think we're right in the pack. I mean, with some of the top teams, I think this year there was definitely a major commitment made to keep this football team together this year. The question is, will the money still be there next year? We're a little bit like Ohio State was a year ago, and the question is, can a year from now we reload and kind of do some things they're doing? We'll find out. But definitely a lot of resources put in. But there's no question from a financial standpoint, the athletic department in terms of cash reserves, and this is all public information that you have to file with the Department of Education. Our cash reserves are still perilously low. And when you think about it, we have, you know, 2 to 3 weeks cash on hand, whereas we should be much higher than that. And we have to find some creative ways. We're going to have to find some alternative funding, those kind of things, to kind of make that up.
All right, we're going to take a break here. Again, our guest is Jay Paterno, brand new book. It's called Blitzed, The All-Out Pressure of College Football's New Era. All right, go to your favorite bookstore or Amazon, wherever you buy books. Good book. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more with Jay. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. We will come right back.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Scott Graham here from Westwood One. Don't miss any of our exclusive NFL action all season long until a new champion is crowned at Super Bowl 60. Of course, each week begins with Thursday Night Football. I'll get it started with a preview and a look ahead at the big weekend games. Then it's to the stadium for the play-by-play of all the action. Join us all season long on Thursday Night Football.
The road to Super Bowl 60 starts right here all season long. Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Our military heroes deserve our thanks. Patriotic Hearts is there to assist those in need, especially in the transition back to family and civilian life. You can help by donating an unwanted car, truck, SUV, or van. Your donation supports the programs that make a difference in the lives of veterans and those actively serving our country. Call today for a fast, free pickup. Your donation will not only be greatly appreciated, but will also qualify as a tax deduction. Call 800-917-1544 to help our military heroes. Call 800-917-1544. Operators are standing by 24/7. Patriotic Hearts, helping our soldiers and veterans live a better life. Call 800-917-1544. That's 800-917-1544. Together, we can make a difference.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Have you checked out our new website, 987thefox.info? When you do, be sure to scroll to the bottom, enter your email address. Then sometime soon, you'll be a 987 The Fox insider with our newsletter feature, thoughts from some of our hosts that you won't get on our shows, messages from sponsors, and even special deals as an insider newsletter exclusive. We'll take good care of your email address, no sharing or selling. Hope you'll join us on 987thefox.info and enter your email address at the bottom. Be an insider, only from 987 The Fox.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines.
The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails.
Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
This is Jim Galante from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, join me, Dustin Hawkinsmith, T. Frank Carr, Andy Shea, and Jeff Byers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox and State College. We'll bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more on the Nittany Lions. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Fox Sports 98.7 for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Let's talk here on a Tuesday morning. Jeff and Scott with you again. We'll have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment of the big show this morning.
All right. Once again, we're talking with Jay Paterno. Jay has a new book out called Blitzed. Nothing to do with College Avenue, folks. The all-out pressure of college football's new era. Good book. All right. Again, go to your favorite bookstore, Amazon, you know, wherever you buy books. Now, Jay, when I reached out to you recently, it was for two reasons. One was the book, all right? But you also wrote an op-ed piece recently about Pat Fitzgerald. And rather than me describe this, I'll let you describe this. What was the purpose of the op-ed? What were you, you know, trying to get across with that piece?
Well, Pat Fitzgerald was fired really without cause, and it was really done in the panic of a, you know, there was some allegations made about hazing and his knowledge or whatever it may be, or his not only knowledge, but there was a belief that he was actively involved in promoting it, which was not true. And initially they kind of cleared him, and then a student newspaper at Northwestern ran a story that had all these players that were had left the program that were, you know, just kind of airing stuff that may or may not. It turns out a lot of it was not factual, which then led to a moment of panic, and the administration at that university fired Pat, and that president has since resigned. Now he then went to court because they basically destroyed his reputation, and he went to court and sued Northwestern for wrongful termination, a number of other things, and they settled. Northwestern settled and issued, basically cleared him and said, yeah, he did not have any knowledge and that kind of thing. And I just thought that was, you know, I felt it was important to talk about that, to talk about what happened to Pat and talk about what kind of person I know him to be because I've known him a while, and what kind of coach he is, and he's the kind of guy you want your son to play for, because often when these stories are written and happen in real time, no one ever follows up and goes, oh, he really didn't do anything wrong. And that one hits fairly close to home, as you guys are well aware, you know, as the story is reported. And then you turn around and you know, Phil Knight wrote the foreword for the book that I wrote about my dad and talked about that time between current events and history. And it takes time for history to correct the reporting on current events, and certainly he was talking about what had happened to Joe in that, and that's certainly what has happened to Pat Fitzgerald. We now are at a point where we now know the history of how that thing unfolded and how wrong it was. And I just, you know, I just felt like it was important to state those things, to reinforce those things, and ask the question, what have we learned when we continue to do this to people who did nothing wrong?
Well, I have an obvious follow-up question, but let me ask this one first. I should know this, and I honestly don't. Is Pat Fitzgerald coaching somewhere right now?
No, he volunteered with his son's high school team, but he certainly is a guy that should be. There's no question about it. And I think this hiring cycle, if I were an athletic director looking for a guy that I know can come in and do a role. You know, here's the thing about Pat Fitzgerald. He won at a fairly high level at a place he'd never won, really won a lot before. I mean, he was consistent. His teams always were excellent in terms of academics. And there was a commitment to a lot of things that were really positive. So if I were an AD somewhere and I'm looking to hire a coach, he's definitely on my short list.
I mean, there are so many things on so many different levels, Jay, about that story. Now, all right, Scott here, folks. I've been involved with journalism since I was in college, which was a very long time ago. Northwestern normally has a highly respected journalism program. And yet their student newspaper, essentially from your description, Jay, did a hit job on Pat Fitzgerald. And I guess I'm wondering, how does a group with a highly esteemed reputation blow this so badly?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a hit job, but what you have now is we've gone to a point where editors are saying, well, do you have, you know, you can write a story that says sources say X, Y, and Z, okay? Not that it's true. Not that it's factual, but you can say sources close to whatever say this, this, and this. And by all journalistic standards, that's an accurate story because sources told us this. Now, the true journalism goes, okay, sources tell me this. I better make sure. I'm going to not just report what the sources tell me. I'm going to do my own homework. If sources tell me it's raining and I'm in a windowless room, I'm going to leave the room and go outside and go, yeah, it is raining. And that's what's not happening right now. Not all over the country with a lot of journalism and stuff. And they, you know, as long as they attribute to sources, they're okay. And the more stories you, you know, a lot of those stories are designed to just get clicks and get money and get people to show up. And I mean, don't even start on the AI stories that are all over Facebook. You know, according to AI, you know, there was an AI story that I've been hired back to coach at Penn State, and people have stopped me and said, hey, it's so great you're back coaching. I'm like, what are you talking about? Oh, there was a story on Facebook from this website. You know, I mean, so this is the world we live in. No one even knows what to believe anymore.
Really? What? Okay, I missed this story. You got rehired. Congratulations.
It was an AI story, and there was an AI story that Tom Brady was going to be an analyst for Penn State. There was an AI that Paul Posluszny was going to come back and be an analyst. I mean, these things just go on and on, and it's kind of, you know, it's all designed to get people to click on the story. And, you know, it's constant. It's a strange world we live in, to say the least.
All right. Earlier, you mentioned keywords, allegations. You mentioned the word panic. And so, yeah, of course, I thought about like 13 or so years ago. Of course, I thought about that. I thought about your dad. I thought about you. I mean, you got thrown out like trash. And so, okay, Northwestern has apologized to Fitzgerald. Okay, that's great. And you mentioned that in your op-ed. Jay, how much longer do we got to wait here? Now, you're in an odd position because you're a board of trustees member, so you're really sort of in the middle of this. How much longer do we have to wait?
That's certainly a question that is not something that I'm involved in having discussed. Look, the reality is this. I mean, by every measure of the law, every measure, Joe did exactly what he was supposed to do and to the fullest extent and reported it in real time. And, you know, that's the whole crux of the story as it relates to him. Now, there are all kinds of other parts of the story that are complex and things like that. But at the end of the day, a guy receives one report of one allegation, he consults university policy and reports it exactly to who he's supposed to, and then backs away like law requires and university policy requires, and the NCAA even changed their guidance a year later, 2 years later, to have coaches do exactly what Joe did. So, you know, at the end of, you know, then you say, well, you know, there's this whole, well, you guys had to know. Well, no, we didn't know, okay, because the only ever thing anybody ever heard was this allegation, and Joe reported it. So, you know, it's one of those things that story still persists, and the university to date has not really acknowledged that. Now, that's going to be up to other people, not me.
I anytime with anything anymore, if you are getting one side of the story, and it may be, I'm not saying every time that happens that story is wrong. It's just your antenna should go up. And again, sometimes, especially when you're getting into criminal allegations, it is only one side that's getting out there because the other side, you know, the lawyers may be, hey, we need to be quiet here, wait till you get to trial. And that has to be tough if you're somebody that knows what you're being accused of is not accurate. But it's not even that it's not a news story or that it's a hit job per se. It's that, hey, well, this is newsworthy. These are serious allegations. Charges are being filed. It's just that if you're not hearing both sides and you're not able to compare and contrast, all right, this part of the story maybe makes some sense. This part maybe doesn't. You're only getting one side. We ought to be able, we're not, but we ought to be able as a society to say, I'm going to wait and hold off my final judgment until I hear the other side and what they, but we see this all the time, Jay, with coaching in the sports world in particular. I'm sure there's plenty of other examples in the in other professions, but and we've had several cases here where it's allegations of mental or emotional or verbal abuse, and it's like I'm not at practice. I have no idea. Like, and what, you know, what one person construes as abusive, another may construe as motivation. Well,
no question.
I do not envy ADs or people in positions that have to make these decisions because, again, once you get a story out there and then you got a couple of other people, hey, yeah, now that I think about it, he yelled at me too much, too. and some of these cases, I think there is genuine abuse. I'm saying it is very difficult if you're not there, you're not aware of all of the circumstances to, but we have people that are very, very willing to make declarative statements and, I know that this person was in the wrong. If you weren't there, man, it's just, to me, that's very tough stuff to try to sort through.
Jay, what do you think?
Well, no question. I mean, when you look at what happened to Pat Chambers, I mean, there were some allegations, and I read the full report of that, and there was no meat there on that bone to do what we did, and that's not to criticize what's come since then or anything like that, but the Pat Fitzgerald thing really rang true to that same approach of, and we're going to err on the side of, we're abundance of caution. Baloney. Abundance of caution is due process. I mean, that's what you should be doing, and that's not what's going on right now. And, you know, even when you look at the case of my dad, you know, in 48 states, you cannot name an unindicted person in a presentment. And so had this happened in Ohio or 40 other states, Joe's name would never even shown up in that presentment, and the story doesn't become about Joe. And Pennsylvania did not have to name him. They chose to name him for whatever reasons. We can guess. I mean, you know, whatever it is. But he shouldn't have even been named in the presentment because he was not charged or accused or did not – he was not indicted the whole nine yards. So, you know, but once these things get out, and like you said, what is hazing? What is a mental abuse? I mean, you know, body shaming. And if you're coaching women's athletics right now, I mean, and you say to a player, says, "What do I need to come in and be a better athlete?" Well, if you lost 5 pounds, you'd be a much more efficient athlete. Well, you got to be careful if you can say that anymore.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, the one thing I envy wrestling is it's not body shaming. Like, you don't weigh this, you're not wrestling. So, I mean, at least they have that crutch.
Yeah. No, it is. It's just such a...
But, I mean, that's the way the sport's governed. But, I mean, when you look at some of the things that are going on, it's a hard deal to be a coach right now.
Well, yeah. And going back to the presentment, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but it would have been helpful if there weren't just flat-out lies made up in a grand
Absolutely.
Jury presentment. The fact that, you still have people, many people across the country. Well, yeah, that coach saw anal rape. No, never saw a doggone thing. Never said he saw a doggone
exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
We're digging up old ground here.
This is the second day in a row, Geezy. You're getting me all worked up.
I'm terribly sorry. There we go.
Just breathe.
Look,
I think the reality is that we need to be more skeptical.
Yeah.
As a society of things like this at times.
And just, take some time to at least assess. Is there credibility here? Let's at least wait to hear the other side, whether or not, and then, again, I'm still going to get things wrong, undoubtedly, but at least, we have the veracity of two different stories to compare rather than, well, we have one side. That's got to be it. That's just insane.
Yep.
Anyways.
All right, let's take a few minutes before we're done. Let's talk football.
All right.
What about that? All right, Jay, Penn State, 2-0, as expected. I'm assuming you've seen games or whatever.
Yep.
What are you thinking right now?
I think, it's hard to gauge because is the intensity level what it should be? Saturday did not feel that way at times early in the game. And part of it is when you schedule the three games you schedule, you really sometimes don't know what you have. If you're going to be critical as a, obviously you win 46-11 and 34-0, you feel pretty good about the fact that you did what you did. But there's some, I think there's no question that, and this is not just my opinion. If you listen to people and coaches and players, they don't feel like offensively they're playing to their abilities as of yet. And I know that's one of the things that's frustrated some fans. Defensively and special teams-wise, they've done a great job getting short fields for the offense. They've really been intense and gone after some things. And at the same time, we don't know how good the teams we played are just yet. I mean, Florida National may be a team that can win their conference, but they came in and competed pretty hard. But I know what people are looking at. They're looking at the Oregon game on Saturday and going, oh, my God, they had 41 points against Oklahoma State at halftime. They look really, really good. And, yeah, they did look really, really good, but every week is different. But I think, you can't do any better than 2-0 right now. Are they the number two team in the country? I don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody knows at this point. Last year, Arizona State barely beat Mississippi State in week two, and no one thought anything of it. Next thing you know, Arizona State wins the Big 12, and they're in the playoff, and they give Texas all they can handle. So, I mean, you just don't know which teams are going to emerge. Florida State, everybody thought was dead and buried against Alabama, and they look like a vast, especially with the transfer portal and all those things. Teams can transform their rosters from one year to next. But I think Penn State certainly, they went out and got a couple of wideouts. There's no question that production from that position has gotten better. You'd just like to see us be able to dominate the offensive line, maybe a little better on the line of scrimmage right now, a little better on offense. But that may come in a matter of weeks.
Now, yeah, Jay, you mentioned the word intensity a minute ago. Now, they're playing Villanova on Saturday. Now, if it was a basketball game, okay, I get it. That should be a great game.
That would be a fun one.
I mean,
I wish when they scheduled Villanova twice, they'd say, look, we'll give you two games, but we need some basketball games on the flip side as part of the contract. I wish they had done that, but they didn't.
I mean, intensity on Saturday, it's like this game should be over at the end of the first quarter, which is ridiculous, but hey. So if you're looking for an intensity boost, I don't think this game Saturday is going to bring it.
No, I think the scheduling, and look, schedules are made years in advance in the whole nine yards, and I think you got to schedule. I think one of the things Oregon has done a good job of is they played Oklahoma State, they played Oregon State before they come here. So they're going to have some, and they go to Northwestern this week. So I think they're going to have been stretched a little bit, or at least been competing against that kind of thing. Now, I mean, Penn State starters were in until there was 3 minutes to go in the game, 4 minutes to go in the game last Saturday, because it was essentially a 20-0 game most of that game. But, you know, the thing is, the players are young. They look at the schedule. They hear what fans say. They hear what family members say. It's, hey, just get through those first three games. You're going to kill them. Then you got an off week. Then you got Oregon. And, I mean, Penn State fans have been talking about the Oregon game since the end of last year because they've looked at the schedule and said that's the, you know, that's the game. And I don't blame them. That's human nature. I mean, look, I'm not coaching anymore. I've done the same thing. I'm not going to lie. You know, look at that and say, oh, I went, you know, I got home and watched Oregon start to finish on Saturday because I want to see what's coming here in a couple weeks. But you know, it's just the nature of the beast. And so that does filter into your locker room as much as you try to keep it out of there. That filters into your locker room. You can't help it. And also there's this pressure that, well, we need to score 40 points right away and sit down halftime. And that's not realistic either.
Jay, real quickly in that regard, though, how important is creating those good habits? Yeah, maybe the intensity isn't there, but just watching some of the film breakdowns that guys like Landon Tangwall are doing, on the offensive side in particular, I think it's harder than maybe people and maybe players included think to flip that switch. I mean, no question they'll be more dialed in for the whiteout against Oregon. I get it, but if you're not in the habit of, man, I got to make that sharp cut if I'm the running back and get behind that hole, I worry about some of the things just being some bad habits that may be forming in these game situations.
There's always that threat. And I think the reality is this. You know, coming off getting the national semifinals last year, everybody immediately assumes you start at that level.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where we are. And they don't realize, you know, it's a long off season. Other teams make improvements. You make improvements. Some things might not be as good. You do lose some. I mean, there's no question when you lose a guy like Tyler Warren, not just as a production, but the intensity he brought every week. And then, you know, one of the things I'll never forget is the first time, I think it was the Giants won the Super Bowl, they finished 9-7 and just had a great run. And in the offseason, they were talking about Tom Coughlin saying, they said, coming off a Super Bowl, and Tom Coughlin looked at him and said, hey, we were a 9-7 football team last year that just happened to win at the right time. And I think when people look at Penn State last year, the question, when you look at it, yeah, the team went 11-1 and lost to Oregon, so 11-2 in the regular season. But if you go back, the Minnesota game was nip and tuck. The Wisconsin game, they were down at halftime. The USC game, they drive and have to win overtime, and Tyler Warren plays. That's a team that could have been undefeated, but at the same time could have been 8-4. And so you can't just say, well, we're this undefeated team as you coach these guys and as you approach the off season, and then, you get to the playoff and you play SMU and Boise State. And that's not to belittle anything that happened because those are the teams that were on your schedule and you took care of business. So,
yep.
But as a coach with a critical eye, you know, you're never as good as you think you are when you win. You're never as bad as you think you are when you lose. So you have to look at that season as a coach in the off season and go in and say, we could be this. We're a couple plays from being this. Yeah, we're a play away from playing for the national championship, but we're also a couple of plays from being 8-4, not being in the thing. So that's, if you coach from that standpoint, now you get that intensity, that hunger. And I think, you know, so much was written with hyperbole of this may be the best offensive line Penn State's ever had. This may be the best running back combo we've ever had. What you should be saying is, look, these guys have a lot of potential, and let's see how the season unfolds. Because when you start talking about the best offensive lines Penn State's ever had, there was an offensive line in the early 80s when all five guys on that line were third-round draft picks or better. Including an NFL Hall of Famer. So that's a pretty high bar when you start saying those things. You take the 94 offensive line. But the thing is, just say, look, we think we can win the Big Ten. And I'm not talking about coach. I'm talking about fans and everybody around. And sometimes players say things like that. And if you're not careful, you set an expectation and a pressure and a bar that is that makes your job harder and sometimes it's self-inflicted.
Jay, we got to take a break, but thanks so much for your time.
Appreciate it.
The book is called Blitz, folks. Check it out. Jay, thanks again.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks for having me on. You guys have a great day.